Hello and welcome to Strange Stuff. My name is Andy.
And I'm Mark.
What was going on? Did you have trouble with Skype again?
Yeah.
If I've got time, I'll have a look when I come down to pack up my apartment.
Yeah. So, you're installed.
I am. I've been here since Sunday.
And?
Yeah. I'm enjoying it so far. The drive's a bit of a... It's neither here nor there, to be honest. It takes probably an hour to get home.
Yeah.
But I mean, it takes the first 10 minutes of that is just walking out to my car.
Oh.
So bloody far. And then, of course, there's the traffic jam getting out of the place.
Aha, of course. Yep.
So, I mean, I sort of timed myself on Tuesday when I left here, and it took 45 minutes door to door.
All right.
Which ain't bad. When you consider that some of the guys who get a bus, they can leave at 4 o'clock and they live sort of in the town centre, but the bus goes such a convoluted route, it can take them 40 minutes to get home.
All right. Yep.
But on the plus side, I mean, it is very, very isolated here. And it is a plus. I mean, there's no light pollution. I am the light pollution in this area.
Good.
So I was keeping an eye out for that comet that was supposed to be visible this morning.
The green one?
Yeah, I didn't see it though.
No.
I think it was a lie.
So it's literally you and the wildlife, wild boar.
Yeah, but I haven't actually seen any yet.
All right.
Which I think is quite unusual because I... Looking out my living room window, I see a vast expanse of like trees and field. And I would have expected to see something bounding or jumping or stalking across there at some point.
So you actually have a view of some description?
Every window.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a house out my back window, but it's a good 100 metres away.
Good.
I've not met any neighbours. In the morning when I leave, I'm the first one to leave tire tracks. And when I come home, they're still the only set on the road.
No. God, that is worrying. Holy smoses.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good for the cats, though. They're going to love it.
Oh. But as long as they don't get taken by lynx or wolves.
Or drop bears.
Or bears, yeah.
I mean... It's only Satan I've got to worry about, really. The other two, they don't seem that interested in going out.
No, but they might now. They've got some exciting areas to visit.
Yeah, true enough. We'll see. Anyway, I forgot to tell you a couple of weeks ago.
That?
We had a guy arrive at the camp.
Yeah.
At the prison camp. And he was an American chap.
Yes.
And I was chatting with him. While he was supposed to be doing his onboarding. And he had his microphone on mute, basically. And we were just chatting. And it came up that we do this podcast. And he said, have you done a podcast on USS Nimitz? And I said, actually, yeah, not too long ago.
Yeah.
Said, I knew I recognised your voice.
You're joking.
No, I've actually met someone who randomly listens to our podcast.
That is crazy. What are the chances?
Pretty slim, considering we only have
three
listeners.
Of the 14 people that listen to it out of the 8 billion people in the world.
So now we've met everybody who listens to our podcast.
Well, that is quite incredible.
No, it was really nice. I didn't ask him what he thought of it because I didn't want to ruin the moment.
Oh, dear. I'm absolutely shattered, I have to say. I've got the roofing people around.
Are they still there?
Yeah.
That's a week.
No, it's more, actually. They started on Tuesday of last week. It's now Thursday, and they're coming back tomorrow.
How big is this roof?
It's not the size. It's very complicated.
Is it the de facto best way to build a roof these days is to pre-build it and then lift it up onto the building?
No, but this is... I don't think it even exists in English, but it's called bandtekning. It's the old-fashioned metal roof that they do joins every half metre.
All right.
So it's very... There's a lot of messing around, so it's certainly not an easy roof to do. But, yeah, they've been here nearly 2 weeks now. It's going to cost a fortune.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Especially if they charge like the moving guys.
yes, exactly. Has your stuff arrived?
No, of course not. I haven't been down to pack it yet.
Yeah.
I'm not coming down till next week. Oh, I've had a
So is the house warm?
This house is actually too warm.
All right.
I'm wearing my Batman hoodie.
I know. I didn't want to say anything.
But I'm going to be sweating like a piggy by the end of this recording session. It's actually too warm. I don't know.
Well, you can turn the heating down, I'm sure. There must be a thermostat somewhere.
There is for the hot air exchanger at the front door.
Right.
But that was set at 24.
That's ridiculously hot.
Yeah, I know. So it's down at 22 now.
Yeah.
But I think I might take it down to 20.
But that can't be the only central heating.
There's radiators. I've had minus 20, minus 18 here every morning.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna turn the radiators down, but I'm going to do it during daylight hours at the weekend when I can see properly.
But what powers the radiators?
I don't know.
What?
There is like a pellet.
Boiler. Fine.
Yeah. But
who's going to feed that?
Well, the heating is included in my rent.
Yeah, but you've got to feed the boiler.
I don't know.
Well, he's not going to go into the house every week to put pellets into the boiler.
I don't know how it works. I've never seen one.
Well, I can tell you that you need to fill up the pellet skip at least once or twice a week.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it depends how big it is. They normally have a screw feed. So maybe he's got a really big one and it only needs filling up every few weeks, but certainly you're going to need to do it.
I don't know. He didn't say anything about how to. I told him I'd never seen one before. I'd never used one. But yeah. He just said, you might hear a noise sometimes. And he said it didn't need looking at often.
Yeah.
I think it might be like a secondary heating system.
Well, anyway, if it's included, it's not your problem per se, but I mean, obviously you don't want him coming into the house every week because you've got to clean the ash out as well.
Well, I don't know. It's in the basement and there was no, I didn't see a store of pellets anywhere.
Yeah, well, there has to be. There's probably a whole room full of pellets and a feeding device.
I'll take a picture of it at some point and send it to you.
Yep.
But anyway, in the news, I noticed... And I haven't listened to the news for so long, but I noticed that they actually did sack that thieving Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yes. Finally. Whose name escapes me. What's his name?
Zawi. Zawi?
No.
Zanawanda?
Zanawi. Yeah, but the amazing thing was that he was actually responsible for HMRC while he was in negotiation for the fine that they were going to impose for him cheating.
What gets me is that 30 years ago, Lester Piggott was put in prison for 5 years for failing to pay tax on £1 million. And this bastard has stolen £36 million of tax from the HMRC. And he doesn't even get a slap on the wrist.
Well, he got a fine of £1 million, but... Whatever,
big deal.
He doesn't get to prison.
No, why didn't he get an equal, if not greater, prison sentence than someone who only avoided tax on £1 million?
I can answer that question.
Oh, is it because he's them and we're us?
He's the deputy chairman of the Conservative Party.
Oh, well, I didn't realise that gave you... Obviously, I did realise it gives you a pass on everything, including murder. A free pass
on anything and everything. Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to know what these fuckers have to do to actually get sent to prison. It would have to be something like a school shooting. And even then, they'd probably get probation.
I wonder who was the last serving MP who actually went to prison.
Well, that's quite easy.
Oh, you know that, do you? Who was that?
You should know it as well.
I probably do. Went to prison.
Yes.
Tell me.
He's also a writer.
Oh, did he go to prison?
He did go to prison.
A very famous writer.
Yes.
Whose name still escapes me because of my memory, but Livingston. No, not Kenlivingston.
No, he should have gone to prison.
He's my mate, Ken Livingston.
Is he?
Oh, what is his name? Come on, tell me his name. He's written quite a few good books. Jeffrey Archer.
Jeffrey Archer, yes.
That
Jeffrey
was L. Archer. Yeah, that began with L.
I was thinking of G for some reason, but I was close with the Jeff, I suppose.
Jeffrey Archer. Did he? He went to prison, did he?
Yes.
Dominic Raab's about to be sacked.
Oh, you know, I'm disgusted with all of them. Would you remember the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when our MPs didn't commit these crimes, or was it just not reported?
No. They didn't.
It's just like, just put them all in prison now and get it over with, because they're all scumbags.
Though it was happening in the 70s and 80s, I watched How Can I Not Spoil a Programme for Potential Viewers that I might recommend. Did you know that it is now accepted that the Thatcher government actually... I wouldn't say orchestrated the miners' strike.
Oh, they certainly manipulated it.
Exactly. They wanted a battleground, and the miners just happened to be the chosen industry.
They needed to destroy the unions.
Orchestrated, have I said that? Orchestrated is what they did. And I think that's utterly despicable. That's a serving government who we still have in power... orchestrated all of that hardship and disruption and violence and everything. And it was all to their own ends.
They're doing the same thing now with this nonsense about the Ukrainian war. Why are we responsible for arming Ukraine to the extent? Well, why are we sending tanks?
We're doing it as a gesture of goodwill, a gesture of solidarity.
We're not. Why have we never sent them to Africa or any of the other wars that have gone on?
Because Putin hasn't invaded them.
What's it got to do with Putin? There's wars going on all over the world all the time.
Yeah, but Putin's on our door.
Oh, he's not.
Of course he is. We live in Sweden.
Oh, but
you can't get much closer. Oh,
I don't think
Finland.
The British government are sending tanks to protect us in Sweden.
What, they're sending them to the Ukraine?
Yes, but it's not on our behalf.
I thought you were going to start talking about the strikes that are happening in the UK, and I would totally agree because the government refuses to do anything.
Well, I mean, they're doing that again as well. Yeah, obviously, they want the country to grind to a halt so they can bring in laws, more laws, against unionisation.
Well, they have. I can't remember if it's passed yet, but so now they've introduced laws against... any demonstration that may offend or annoy more than two people, that's outlawed.
Yeah, and that's basically two police officers.
Exactly. And then they're trying to knock into touch the European Bill of Human Rights, because that gets in their way. What was the other thing they're trying to do at the moment? I mean, it's like some sort of, I don't know, fascist state.
Well, yeah. It is exactly that. It's a dictatorship. Because we've had the same fucking government for 12 years destroying the country and raping it of all its money and goods and leaving the populace with nothing except food banks.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't understand how they're still in power. I really
don't. In power. No.
And you know what? They will get voted back in again.
No, they won't. If my family or anything to go by, which are conservative voters for the last 40 years. If you listen to them, they've given up with them as well. Enough is enough.
The whole thing is diabolical.
Diabolical, that's a good word. I hope people aren't going to be able to hear me munching in the background, but I haven't had any lunch. I've been working since 7 o'clock this morning.
I think you've actually got a little cadre of fans who listen specifically for your munching.
Well, there's nothing else to worth listening to in our production, so they might as well.
Although, having said that, I can already say from my headphones that our production value has increased 1,000% since I moved here.
What do you mean production value? You've done some real research, you mean?
No, I mean that our sound quality, because I've got proper internet here now instead of shared internet with 40 other people. So there's no background hissing, there's no interference, and you won't be dropping out.
Excellent, good.
I can hear the difference already in my own headphones.
And, sorry, what have you got, your own router then or something?
Well, yeah, it's just the same as, like, you've got, except it's just me. Whereas while I was at the camp, everybody was using the same
Of course, yeah, bandwidth. Yeah. It's a bit unkind to call it a camp.
But it's called the
you
camp.
You could call it a barracks.
No, it's called the camp. It's called Hwlefdia Camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or the shithole, as we referred to it.
You were so pleased when you moved up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but after spending 2 months in the camp, you realise that the veneer starts losing its shine a little bit.
I have to say, as I commented right from the start, it was a very small room.
It was awful. That was the reason that when I wasn't working, I always went out for a drive every day just to get out for a couple of hours. Also, you sort of start to realise that you're not treated like a paying guest. You're treated like an inconvenience. Sometimes they'd come in. They used to clean the room on a Friday and change the bedding. But sometimes you'd go in and it looked like you'd been burgled. Like, there was very little room in the room. So as you walked in, you had your shower and the toilet on the right, and then you had an armchair on the left facing the bed on the right. And then at the end of the room, under the window, you had a desk where I set up my laptop.
Yep, yep.
I walked in there the last time they actually did anything while I was still there. And it looked as though the room had been burgled. The armchair was almost inside the wardrobe, next to the desk. And it was facing the wardrobe. It's like someone had just thrown it across the room. I had 2 pairs of shoes in the room, and they were in 4 different positions. One shoe over there, one shoe over there, one shoe over there. I mean, it was just no effort.
Were your porn mags all in a neat snack stack next to the bed, though?
Oh, they were stolen.
But also, no one would want to steal your porn mags, I can tell you that.
Also, the last 4 or 5 days that I was there, there was not one drop of washing up liquid in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
And that's just not acceptable. You know, they treated us more like an inconvenience and prisoners than paying guests.
6,000 a month, was it? 600 a month?
6,000 a month, and that's like more than my rent in Vormus.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, what's the subject matter this evening? It's got to be good, because I'll tell you what, otherwise I'm going to be falling asleep here. I'm so tired.
All right, well, I realised after I'd chosen the subject matter that
we've done it before, four times.
No, but we're definitely on a theme. This is another London-centric episode.
Oh, dear. Not about pork scratchings, Fanny scratchings, Scratchy Fanny.
That was last week.
I know. What was her name?
Scratching Fanny.
Scratching Fanny, exactly.
Of Cock Lane.
Of Cock Lane, yes, you're right. Oh, dear. So what is the London-centric? Which century are we in?
Well, actually, we're going back to 100 years before Jack the Ripper, almost exactly. In fact, exactly, 1788 to 1799.
And this isn't Jack the Stripper?
No. This chap.
Wouldn't it be funny if you prepared a presentation of something we had actually done before and didn't realise it?
Yeah, I don't think I'm at that stage of my senility yet.
I certainly am. It would take me a good 10 minutes. Hang on a second, haven't we done this before?
And this week, Mark, we're going to talk about Jeff, the talking mongoose.
Oh, no, I'm never going to forget that. I'm never think. Yeah, you're right. Anyway, so carry on. 1780 something or other.
1788. And in those times, imagination was high. Shadows in the alley might look like monsters, and even human movements can cause panic in a time where people literally could die any second
of the plague
or any other random violence. But Londoners would start gossiping about quite a violent mania that struck terror into the hearts of the public. And the newspapers of the time, as always, keen to downplay anything that might cause chaos and panic, named this fella the London Monster.
So he was a single individual?
Yes. And
what did the London Monster get up to?
Okay, well, one Sunday evening in May of 1788, Maria Smythe walked along Fleet Street when a thin, short man approached her. With an eager voice, he spoke to Mrs. Smythe about indecent topics.
Are you for business? Are you for business, darling?
Oh, no, no, no. Much more indecent than that.
Uh-huh.
Although this display shocked her, Maria Smythe ignored him, but the man continued to follow her. When she arrived at the front door of a friend's house, she asked him to leave her alone. Nevertheless, the man continued to stare and grin. The moment Mrs. Smythe knocked on the door, the man jumped forward, struck her beneath the left breast and the left thigh, and then continued to stare at his victim. Mrs. Smythe was only saved from further attacks when the house's occupants helped her inside. Her rescuers stopped her thigh wounds bleeding with a balsam.
What, she'd been stabbed? Did you tell me that?
She had been attacked with a sharp object.
Oh, all right.
Stories soon began to circulate among women, which intersected with each other. A man who confronted them without foul, he used coarse language, harassed female pedestrians, and escalated certain encounters to physical confrontations, during which he slashed dresses or bodies with a sharp object. Dozens of such stories would cause women to take certain precautions, such as wearing metal undergarments to protect against the intentions of the attacker.
And yeah, because that was commonly available in 1788. You go to your underwear shop and they've got a selection of armour-plated underwear.
It actually was, because this is where the expression copper bottoms comes from.
Remind me what context we use copper bottoms.
A copper bottom pattern.
You don't know, do you?
What, you've got, yeah, have you got no copper bottom pans?
Copper bottom argument. I can't feel the context of the expression copper bottom. What copper, the hell?
That's a man fitting a copper bottomed undergarment to a lady.
God, dear. Right.
Now, London became a bit overstretched during the 18th century. At the start of the century, the total population was around about 630,000 inhabitants. But by the close of it, there were close to 1 million souls in the city. A decline in infant mortality because of improved childcare, migration and better hygiene caused London to expand at a rather increased pace. Now, the population growth, along with the concentration of wealth, led to the creation of a vast criminal underworld, much the same as what happens today, where we get the immigration from Eastern Europe, which spawns the underworld associations with the Albanian gangs, the Russian gangs, and the Polish gangs. And the underworld always expands as quickly as the normal population. So this situation worsened to such a degree that groups of thieves could intimidate the authorities in broad daylight. In those days, they didn't have a police force as such. They had the...
They did have a police force.
No, Robert Peel was much later than 1780. He was 1800s.
Was he?
Yeah. They had... Oh, It will come to me.
The army.
No, they did have like the guys with the whistles, basically. Bobbies, but they weren't Metropolitan Police. Anyway, Londoners took care when they moved around the settlement at night, lest the great numbers of lanes hit footpads, highwaymen, or pickpockets, or worse. Authorities created over 100 offences, many of them related to larceny, punishable by death to dissuade criminals. There was no regular police force to enforce laws. Law enforcement's configuration differed from parish to parish. Most constables were part-time tradespeople armed with sticks who served for a year. In addition, a small force of night watchmen might patrol their beats, during which they called out the time.
They called out the time?
Yeah, they were just basically watchmen. And a watchman's pay was minuscule, so it didn't attract the best recruits. Certain watchmen even worked with criminals to supplement their income. And despite this situation, the powers that be rejected police reform, must have been conservatives, such as the 1785 bill, since they thought it was unnecessary and would undermine the established voluntary system. Here we go. Only the Bow Street Runners. That's who I was looking for.
All right.
Only the Bow Street Runners force, formed by local magistrate Sir Thomas de Vale in the first half of the 18th century, had the abilities to conduct unbiased, effective criminal investigations. But there were only 8 of these detectives at only any one time.
For the whole of London?
Well, bear in mind that in those times, every parish had their own police force. So right. The Bow Street Runners would have taken care of one part of the East End of London, basically. And outside of your whistle range would be another set of constables from another parish.
All right.
Criminals took advantage of the porous law enforcement net. The same year Mrs. Smythe had been assaulted in 1788, a small man also confronted and hurled foul language at a certain Mrs. Franklin. In 1789, Mrs. Franklin's sister, Kitty Wheeler, also experienced an encounter with this man at a gala in Chelsea, but she could enlist the aid of a gentleman to intercede on her behalf. Afterwards, the man would continue to stand outside her house at odd times. Now, this guy...
Maybe he was the first stalker.
Well, he did have a very specific MO. He only went for attractive, young, fashionable, wealthy-looking women. And because of this, it sort of threw the police a curveball a little bit, because what would happen was some older, not-so-attractive women would claim to have been assaulted by this chap just to prove to their peers that they were still young and attractive.
Well, they didn't have Netflix in those days, so what else were they going to do?
Yeah, but May 1789 would see more attacks. Mrs. Sarah Godfrey walked the streets of London when she noticed her stalker wherever she went. There he was. Once she crossed the threshold of a Piccadilly upholsterer's shop, he walked up to her to make an amorous proposal.
Mm-hmm. Are you for business, darling?
No, that's not an amorous proposal, is it? Stop reverting back to your teenage
Well, it's the only language, it's the only expression I know.
Well, yeah, but you had a very sheltered upbringing.
Well, clearly.
Mrs. Godfrey ignored him, went inside and went about her business, but he was still there when she exited a while later. Along her route home, he followed her in silence. As she readied herself to walk through the front door, he stabbed her upper thigh and then departed the scene.
Oh, God.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
I think this fellow sounds a bit Turkish. Isn't it Turkish people that stab people in the arse?
It's known as Turkish revenge.
Is it?
Yeah. You do. It's a prison thing. And you stab them in the arse because nobody can die from a stab wound in the arse.
So you can't they?
So you cannot be done for attempted murder.
Is that right?
But
bloody uncomfortable.
But anyone you stab in the arse is not going to be sitting down for a shit for several weeks to come.
That's right. Maybe he's got a bit of Turkish blood in him.
Possibly. This is...
Coke.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's wine. But it's. I'm taking a chance. I don't drink during the week, obviously, because I'm driving. But this morning, they gave everyone going through the main gate a breath test.
So what? On that basis, think you'll have a drink this evening because they're not going to do it twice in a row?
No, on that basis, I'm saying that's why I don't normally drink of an evening. Well, I mean, obviously, I don't drink of an evening because I'm driving 50 kilometres in the morning. But the chances of, like, if you had 2 or 3 glasses of wine, you could still possibly blow a positive in the morning.
Absolutely.
So I sort of wanted to hang around the gate and see if anyone got nicked. But I was struggling to get to work as it was. So
So what do they do if you do test positive for alcohol? Do you get sent home or do you get sacked?
There's a zero tolerance policy. I don't know if they'd sack you on the spot. It depends. I suppose if you actually turned up drunk to work, then you might get sacked on the spot. But if you blow like just over the limit, they'll probably just send you home.
Oh.
It's understandable considering what we work with.
No, of course.
It's just the first time I've ever come across it. I've heard of it happening in different parts of the site, but I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
It's not just alcohol, it's drugs as well. They've got a very high-tech blower. You don't put separate tubes on for everybody. They just hold it in front of you and you blow into a hole.
And that's enough for alcohol and drugs?
Apparently so.
Interesting.
Okay, anyway, back to the story. Also in AA 1789, Mary Foster encountered a slender man after she had departed the Haymarket Theatre. He insisted that she ride in a cab with him to her home, but she declined his offer.
I'm not surprised.
After she walked away, he followed her very closely, staring at her with eager eyes. Miss Foster declined to engage in conversation, but when they entered Dean Street, he cursed her, struck her upon the thigh, and fled the scene. Blood poured from her wound, which caused her to lose about a quart or a litre of blood.
I know Dean Street.
I know it very well. It's part of Soho.
Exactly.
Miss Foster would testify that she had seen her assailant prior to and after her attack, often in public assembly rooms and theatres, where he loitered about for no reason. The monster would charm his way out of any confrontation, but more attacks would follow. Miss Anne Frost, Miss Anne Morley, Miss Eleanor Dodson would all be victims of assaults in 1789. And towards the end of 1789, on the evening of the 7th of December, a man confronted the Bourne sisters, Elizabeth and Frances, near Bridge Street. He muttered to himself and then into Frances' ear. The sisters tried to get away from him, but he shadowed them, even when the sisters broke into a sprint. The monster caught up with them near Parliament Street, at which point he slashed their dresses several times before he departed the scene. Now, in the year of 1790, this would be when the attacks widened in scope, notoriety and brazenness. On the 19th of January, Anne and Sarah Porter left the Queen's birthday celebrations at around 11 o'clock in the evening. Their chaperone, Mrs. Meal, accompanied them on the walk home. A quarter of an hour into their walk, a man stared into their faces. After other pedestrians walked away, the stranger hit Sarah on the back of the head. Thereafter, the three women ran to Perro's Bagnio, the sister's home. While they banged on the front door, the man struck Anne Porter on the hip. The assailant grinned at them while they struggled to get into the building. John Porter, their brother, at last opened the door, whereupon the three women rushed inside. Later, when a medical practitioner, Surgeon Tompkins, examined Anne Porter, he found a thigh wound with an approximate length of 6 inches and a depth of 3 inches.
That is quite serious.
That is a big wound.
He must have a razor blade or something.
During that same January evening, someone had also attacked four other women, Mrs. Harlow, Mrs. Toussaint, Miss Felton and Mrs. Burney. After several more attacks, the monster attacks would start to feature a new technique. In April of 1790, a servant girl, who remained anonymous, smelled a nosegay proffered by a gentleman, but soon she noticed a sharp pain. She'd been cut in the nose. Newspapers soon connected the various attacks. Attack survivors also connected with each other to compare their experiences. Maria Smythe, the first victim, identified William Tuffing, a clothes sales associate, as her assailant, although he walked free when none of the other victims identified him. Furthermore, while he'd been in custody, a new monster attack came to light. As the monster became more and more infamous, people became more and more anxious about the safety of London's inhabitants. In April of 1790, a Lloyd's broker, John Julius Angerstein, offered a £100 reward for the capture and conviction of the guilty party, which he proclaimed through hefty posters pasted across the capital. These notices heightened the public's awareness even further. One person who had read Angerstein's posters was Dr. Bush.
Is there such a doctor?
Obviously was, who kept an eye out while he visited his patients. On the 4th of May, he noticed a man pursue a woman onto a porch where the assailant made ready to stab his victim with a sharp, shiny object. Once the doctor had driven off the monster, he gave chase, accompanied by one servant. And on the corner of Piccadilly and St. James's Street, the doctor was about to apprehend his quarry when a stranger accused him of being the monster. The ensuing confusion allowed the guilty party to escape.
Well, that was a bit of a cock-up, wasn't it?
But you can understand if a guy is chasing someone through the streets of London in 1790 and everyone's on the lookout for someone chasing people through the streets of London, confusion would ensue.
I know the junction of Piccadilly and St. James's.
Yeah, of course, because one of your tailors used to work there, I'm sure.
I used to work very close by. I used to work in German Street.
Well, German Street is, of course, famous for the shirts.
That's right. Of which I still have some.
I thought you would. There's a chap I work with whose ambition, in fact, is to go to German Street and get measured up, and also to go to Savile Row and also get measured up. Not to actually purchase, because he can't afford it. He just wants the experience of measuring up.
I was going to say, I can't imagine how much a Savile Row suit costs these days. It's probably a couple of grand.
Yeah, it would be at least 1,800 to 2,000 for a pretty basic Savile Row suit.
Yeah.
And the shirts must come in at 250, 300.
No, they're not that bad, actually. Charles Thuin. Oh, well, made to measure, of course they're going to be. But it's Charles Thuin. But I didn't used to buy those. I used to buy another brand out of German Street, funnily enough. Anyway, whatever, this got nothing to do with, other than the story was centred around these parts.
Well, it is relevant, really.
It is relevant, you're right. Fortnum and Mason, were they around in 1789?
I don't think so. I think they were probably 1800s.
Could be. They've been around a long, long time, Fortnum and Mason.
I'd be really amazed if it was 1700 and something. Feel free to Google.
I was going to do some research while we're talking.
Okay, so attacks from April to May 1790 featured culprit descriptions that weren't quite uniform. Some victims described a tall, pale aggressor, while others stated a short, swarthy man had attacked them. Disguises might have been behind the misdirection, but on the other hand, more than one person could also have been guilty of these crimes. But also, as I mentioned earlier, there were probably quite a few ladies who weren't attacked, who wanted to feel included in the young, wealthy, attractive
1707.
Bracket. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And it's still going?
Yeah. The Fountain Bar is still operating. That's changed since I used to go there. I literally worked opposite Fortnum & Mason, 61 German Street.
I knew a girl who worked in the same place.
81 German Street. 61 is that Franco's restaurant.
I knew a girl who worked in the same place.
Fortnum & Mason?
No, outside. She was a hooker.
You just have to bring it down to your East End Cockney level, don't you?
You're not the only one who used to work the streets of London, mate.
Oh dear. So anyway, all these attacks, sorry, they've identified him. No, they're getting confused about his description.
Yes. And Anne Porter, who the monster had attacked earlier that year, was strolling through St. James's Park on the 13th of June when she noticed a face. The person she thought was her attacker. Her admirer at the time, John Coleman, apprehended the man in the park, and his name was Rinnick Williams.
Rinnick.
Now, Rinnick Williams...
He's not Welsh.
A 23-year-old Welshman. Look,
how
you.
Was it? Do you choose these stories just so you can do an accent?
Sometimes.
Look, you.
Struggled after his employers had fired him from his ballet dancer post because of theft accusations.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And after this, he did odd jobs at different places, such as at an artificial flower factory. Now, I would
silk flowers.
I was going to say, I can't. It wouldn't have been plastic because that was not invented.
No, but silk flowers, yeah.
Was there a market for such? I would have thought that most of the big houses would insist on fresh every day in those days.
Yeah, but for people from your end of the street, is all they could afford was probably they had paper fake flowers as opposed to silk fake flowers.
We couldn't afford paper, mate. When we decorated our rooms, we used to use pig's blood. Oh, that's a nice shade of red. Yeah, pig's blood, mate.
Idiot.
We were talking about that as well today. For some reason, we were talking about wallpaper, toxic wallpaper, and how the the most expensive wallpapers in the certainly in the 1700s, 1800s were actually toxic because of the colour. No, it was arsenic.
They used arsenic in the process,
they used arsenic in the process of colouring, especially blue, which was the hardest colour to get on wallpaper. And because it was the most difficult colour to achieve, everybody wanted it. So everybody was putting arsenic up on their walls.
What, they were licking their wallpaper, were they?
I don't think you have to lick it. You can absorb it through your skin.
Actually, I think you're right, funny enough. I think arsenic you can absorb through your skin. What on earth, what sort of conversation was that to have at work?
You'd be amazed what we talk about at work. Sometimes I've gone in the morning, I've got my tea and I've sat down at the table and the first sentence I've heard is, and then I smelled his bum hole. And I've gone, all right. 6:35 in the morning. Do I wanna join in this intriguing conversation or not?
No, clearly not.
But you've got no choice.
Anyway, so sorry, this fellow's been arrested. Rinnick, Welshman.
Rinnick.
Look you.
Look you. Yeah, because there were theft accusations. And afterwards he did odd jobs, as I said, like at the artificial flower factory. Now, Anne Porter and her sisters believed that he was also the same man who had stalked them in the streets.
There you go. Caught, collared,
nonetheless,
mate.
Nonetheless, other witnesses declared that he bore no resemblance to their attacker. Now, I'm going to send you a little picture of this chap. Bear in mind, he's 23 and the year is 1790, so give him a break.
I'm still looking at that picture you sent me about those copper bottoms. Why is she holding a mirror showing her cleavage?
There had to be some titillation to sell papers, even in those days.
He's a bit of a looker. He's certainly not slim. He's got the figure of a woman. He's got plum-shaped thighs.
You have a woman's thighs.
Doesn't he? He's got the shape. He's the shape of a woman.
I don't know how sexist that might appear to be to some of our listener.
Well, unfortunately, people do have different... Men have different figures to women. We don't have broad hips, but he does.
Well, perhaps he was pre-transitioned thing.
Could be.
I don't know what they call them.
I mean, since it's a picture, am I allowed to comment on his nose?
I don't see why not.
He could have caused a bit of damage just by using his nose, this fellow.
I can tell you what, I would not let him anywhere near my coke stash. Get the fuck away from my Charlie.
Yep.
Anyway, Rinnick Williams, isn't it? Look you. His fellow workers provided quite a strong alibi for him. But the authorities still sought a conviction. So judges charged Williams with, of all things, a rather ancient law in those days, which was the destruction of foreign clothes by disgruntled weavers.
That was a crime.
It was a crime because weavers were getting the hump when trade started big in London and people were importing cloth. So what the weavers used to do was basically burn the cloth and try and sink the boats, no doubt, as they were bringing in this competition from abroad, probably mostly from India. Now, because the justification was so tenuous, the 12 judges of England, as they were known, I guess that was the High Court, decided that the case had to be retried. And these judges afterwards would convict and sentence Rinnick Williams to 6 years, look you, in Newgate Prison. Now, the monster attacks ceased after his arrest.
Well, there we go. Case closed, sorted, end of story.
Still, evidence against him had been very thin, like the research in this podcast. Despite the best efforts of authorities, and shortly after the saga, John Coleman collected the substantial monster reward prize and he married Anne Porter. The promise of self-enrichment might have been a motivation for Coleman's actions.
What was the reward? £100?
£100, yeah, in 1790. That was quite a chunk of change.
That probably was, yeah.
Are you going to check that out?
Present day value of £100 in 1788.
Yep.
I can do that.
Well, yes. While you're doing that, so what happened in London during that period? The high number of attacks, some sources go well over 50, as well as the varied descriptions, seems to suggest that there was probably more than one monster. Newspapers, though, heightened the awareness of the media-produced frenzy. They might have uncovered the true extent of the violence that women could face in the city. And in order to process this shocking reality, people attributed the brutal acts to a supernatural being called the London Monster.
Right.
So the methods and description of the monster had always sort of varied considerably. Some accounts mentioned him using knives, which he had fastened to his knees, and in other reports that he used this fake nosegay with a hidden blade within the flower. And then when he invited his victim to sniff it, they would be stabbed in the face. But most accounts mentioned the insults, stalking, and the harassment that would precede the attack. Eventually believing to be responsible for attacking more than 50 women, with some suffering quite extensive wounds after his knife had sliced through their clothing. And because of the extensive press coverage of the monster attacks, any man who acted suspiciously was considered a suspect, and very soon a mob mentality descended on the city.
It wasn't much money.
Was it not?
I mean, I've calculated in dollars, but it must be roughly equivalent. £100, $100 in 1788 is only worth $3,334 today.
Oh, yeah, but bear in mind that the pound was a lot stronger against the dollar than it is now. Even in the 60s, a dollar was 10 shillings. You got $2 to the pound, at least.
Yeah, but even if it's a factor of two out, it's still only £6,000. All right, I've just done it in sterling then. Hang on. Calculate. Why isn't it calculating?
Because it's too much money.
No. 19,000.
Well, there you go, 20 grand.
You're right, it's actually, yeah.
So anyway, some men wore labels on their lapels, which indicated they belonged to the No Monster Club, which was a group formed to prove its members were innocent of any wrongdoing. And as we mentioned earlier, some women took to wearing copper pans over their petticoats to protect themselves from injury.
It would have been bloody inconvenient. If you were a woman, how could you have a wee with one of those things on?
Well, no, it was only basically attached to the back of your petticoats. It was just to protect your anus.
Anus, you idiot. He wasn't sticking a knife up their arse, you idiot. He was stabbing their thighs. Which is bloody dangerous, actually, because isn't one of your big arteries going down your thigh?
You've got the femoral artery in your thigh.
Exactly.
On the inside.
Yeah.
Now, because London businessman John Julius Angerstein offered this reward of £100, it caused more panic because armed vigilante groups started patrolling the city and anyone who was considered suspicious was attacked. And the inevitable flurry of false accusations were made. Can you imagine? You've got a beef with your neighbour.
Yeah.
And here comes a bunch of vigilantes and you go, monster!
Yep.
And your dirty work is carried out for you.
I seem to remember Satanic Sheep was around this period as well. Or was that 100 years earlier?
Oh, I think that might have been...
I think that was 1688.
That was definitely 1600s, I think. Yeah, I mean, this is the time of the American War of Independence, isn't it?
Yes, it is, isn't it? The Patriot.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson.
Yeah, it must be.
Anyway, this fellow's in the nick. I thought he'd already been arrested and put in prison, so why was this £100 still
circulation? I'm just saying what happened around the reward.
All right.
Because people were forming vigilante groups and marching around the streets. Now, at his second trial,
Williams, look new.
He retained the services of an Irish poet, Theophilus Swift, who acted as his defence lawyer. Now, I don't know if he defended him in rhyme all the time because he was a poet and damn, he know it.
Not bad.
But he offered,
off the cuff.
He adopted a different strategy, and that was proving that Anne Porter and her admirer, John Coleman, had concocted a scheme to obtain the reward money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Porter denied the accusation despite the fact that she had subsequently married Coleman, who had been the receipt of the large reward. And throughout the trial, witnesses once again gave contradictory statements about their alleged attacks. Williams protested his innocence, and his co-workers said that he'd been at work during most of the attacks, but they found him guilty of three counts, and he was sentenced to 2 years on each count for a total of sentence of 6 years in prison. But he didn't serve them all consecutively. I think he did 2 years concurrently. Although an arrest had been made, there were some reports of attacks attributed to the monster for many years after his imprisonment, and some historians debate if the monster had existed at all or if it was all due to the mass hysteria and atmosphere of suspicion at the time. And that, my friends, is where we will leave you to make up your own minds, because it brings us to the end of this week's episode of our London-centric 3 weeks in London, London, England.
Well, as long as you post that photograph on Instagram as well, the first stories that you came up with all described him as a small, thin man. That you wouldn't describe as a thin man. He's got hips the size of a hippo.
Bear in mind, this is an illustration, and it could have been just a cartoon in a newspaper.
It could have been any random picture that you happen to find on the internet that you're just posing as this fellow Remick Williams. Look new. Look
busted,
now.
Busted, isn't it?
He's got a very nice shirt. He obviously comes from a well-to-do family.
Well, and he only attacked well-to-do women.
Yeah.
Which is strange, because he didn't steal anything.
So there's no indication of why he stabbed these poor girls in the thigh.
No, it seems he was obviously not trying to kill anybody, but he...
No, if he was not trying to kill anybody, he would have stabbed them up the arse, because according to you, that can't kill you.
But, I don't know about the anus, but certainly the cheeks, where the Turkish revenge is normally carried out, won't kill you.
Is that really a thing? It's actually called Turkish revenge.
Yes.
Really?
If you piss someone off in prison, watch your arse.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll never end up there. And I'd be watching my arse the whole time if I ever did.
So would your boyfriend. But you'll be all right, because you're a conservative through and through, goddammit. You're immune to prison.
Oh, you never know.
You're part of the ruling classes.
Doesn't count here in Sweden, does it?
I think prison in Sweden is a different kettle of fish. I think I've heard, and I don't know how true this is, but I understand that you can do your prison time when you like in Sweden. If you want to be doing prison Monday to Friday, that's fine. You can be out for the weekend.
No, I think that's a bit of a story of that Katie Hopkins right-wing extremist person in England who... That's the sort of story she would come up with.
No, I heard this years and years and years ago.
Though, having said that, the number of... You know that website that we watch sometimes, that Brits in Sweden? Mm-hmm. The number of people who are being deported, even though they've got family and children in Sweden. I mean, there are a number of that have posted recently about being deported from Sweden.
Yeah, but I would like to know the circumstances of that deportation.
Well, yeah, I mean, they claim that they just never filled out the documentation properly, which in itself is a bit stupid. If you've lived here for 15 years, you can't claim that you didn't know anything about it.
Do your due diligence. I get fed up with people who say, oh, I've lived here for 15 years and all of a sudden they're kicking me out. And then, all right, they told me I needed to just sign this form on the internet and press send, but I couldn't be bothered. So now they're kicking me out and it's not my fault. Well, actually, yeah, it is.
Andy, if ever I'm in need of sympathy, I would never come to you.
Well, no.
I would never come knocking on your door. Andy, you won't believe what happened to me.
I don't do empathy, sympathy, or any other pathy, except pornography.
Have you ever been diagnosed with something? Have you got any letters after your name, ADHD or ADH or something?
I do have letters. Andy, surname, M-A.
Master of arse. Arse master, A-M.
Oh, that would be a good one. I am, I did do a cooking course.
Did you?
Apparently I am now a master baker. I'm sure that's what he called me.
I think you've got more O-levels than I do.
I don't know.
I've got four.
Oh, then yeah.
I've got four, and I always say five because I got D in English O-level. Yeah, but no one knows that's
D
actually a failure.
But, yeah.
All right. And I want to look into this Copper Bottom.
Copper Bottom. Yeah, you should have a look into that. I looked into Copper
Bottom investment, safe as houses sort of thing.
Maybe, could be. I'm pretty certain it's fallen into common use in the English language as a result of copper-bottomed undergarments.
That's the amazing thing about Google. You can just go meaning of copper, that's C-O-P-P-E-R, copper bottom. Copper-bottomed. Thoroughly reliable, certain not to fail.
There you go.
But it doesn't tell you where it came from.
It's a bit like gold-plated. Gold-plated investment. Can't lose.
Can't lose. Copper bottom guarantee. Yeah.
In the meantime, let's say...
So the London monster, he didn't turn out to be that monstrous. It's not as if he ate his victims.
No, but because he caused so much fear and distress and citywide panic, they had to give him a name and the newspapers had to sell their newspapers.
Yeah, I think the name Jack the Stripper is more exciting.
Yeah, I think that was one of my ancestors who came up with that headline.
Jack the Stripper.
I've got it. I've got it, lads. I've got it. Get on this. Jack the Stripper.
We need to do some more internationally flavoured. Is there an equivalent in Sweden of Jack the Ripper?
I mean, there must be. There's probably one on every continent.
Yeah, there has to be, doesn't
there? In fact, I know there is, but we don't do murder investigations as such. We need to have a twist.
You're right. It's got to be strange. I'm not interested in doing... What do you call those things? Crime?
True crime.
Not crime. What's it called? Real crime.
True crime.
True crime. True crime. Yeah, no, I don't like it. They always end up as too gory. I mean, this is so old. It's, you know, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't nice for the victims.
Well, nobody died.
They're probably not around anymore.
Nobody died.
And nobody died.
To run around London slashing dresses and poking people in the face with a pointy flower is a very strange pastime.
Oh, dear. All right, good. What is the time? Holy schmoses, it's 6:40.
Yep. Okay, so thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
Don't forget, check us out on our website at www.strangestuffpodcast.com, where you can find links to all our socials. Give us a like, give us a follow, give us a subscribe. Look out for our twats, which don't happen that often. Have yourselves a strange week. Don't go around poking women with sharp objects in the middle of London. And if someone pokes you with one, run like hell.
Professional.